Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and it's the Monday Morning Podcast for Monday, November 11th, 2013. How's it going, dude? You know, guess who got his Boston Red Sox championship hat the other day? This guy right here. Oh, I was there from October 7th on. I'll tell you, the mental anguish that I went through as a fan over those 23 days, whatever the fuck it took them to win it. But I got to tell you, I actually don't like the hat. It just makes me feel old when I look at it. It just used to just be the B, and then it'd be like, oh, 2013 champions. That's all you needed. Now they got the fucking trophy spinning out to the right. The B's over here. It's a fucking mess. You know? I don't know. I just look, you know what I look like when I put it on? I look like I'm trying to start a rapping career. Can I have the middle-aged white guy? Our team won a championship and I kind of sucked in gym class, but God damn it, I had heart. White dude hat. Can they make one of those? I don't fucking know. Oh, I don't know. Anyways, I'm you know, not shitting on that, you know, that style of a hat. I'm just saying it just looks dumb on my head. You know? I'm white. Of course I observe sports. Why would you pick me? I am right where I'm supposed to be in the stadium. I'm sitting in the stands. How about having a little consideration for a rapidly aging, balding, slow red-headed white dude, and give me a nice boring hat? What am I, fucking Ashton Kutcher? Is that an old reference? I mean, that fucker's in his 30 by now. I don't know what happened in the last 10 years, but I've noticed it in my act when I go to make references. I think I brought this up before. I was doing a college gig. So I'm up there. I'm trying to be hip. I'm trying to be down. I don't know what I was doing. And I made a reference. I needed a reference for, you know, a young pop skanky kind of chick. And I threw out Britney Spears. And, dude, I'm telling you, absolute fucking crickets. I got nothing on it. And then I just did the math quickly in my head. I'm like, wait a minute. Britney Spears is like a 32, 33-year-old divorced mother of two at this point. She's not that 18, 17, 18-year-old girl coming out going, oh, I pop my pussy. Whatever the fuck she sang in her little fucking outfit, you know, total entrapment. Hey, once she's of age, can you still go back and jerk off to that video, or is that still looking at kiddie porn? Look, I know in the video she's 17, but right now she's 26. So even if you split the difference, she's like 23, right? Anyway, so then I had to like, I made a reference. I did Don Myrera's podcast, and we were talking about, he busted me when I did. Maybe it wasn't his podcast. I did his stand-up show down at the Laugh Factory. The world-famous Laugh Factory, everybody. All right, and if you're around the world and you've never heard of the world famous Laugh Factory, then I think you need to become a little more cosmopolitan, a little more worldly. Okay, you got the Great Wall of China, you got the Arc de Triomphe, and you have the world famous Laugh Factory on Sunset Strip. All right, run by the always lovely Jamie Masada. And I was down there doing a stand-up thing, and Dom has this cool show where, like, you know, you do stand-up, and then after you're done, he comes up and he does these interviews, which is more you just sit there breaking each other's balls and laughing your ass off. So he called me out on dusting off some old topical material, but I forget how I dropped into it. But I did the whole, oh, speaking of this, you know, what's up with Monica Lewinsky? I mean, it wasn't that bad. But it was one of those deals where he busted me and I laughed about it. And I was reminded this time in like the early 2000s, I was working with this fucking hack and he was on stage and he just goes out of nowhere. He goes, you know, people are still talking about OJ. The OJ Simpson trial was in 90, The murder happened in June of 94, and the trial concluded in October of 95. And it was 2002, and this guy goes, people are still talking about O.J. 7 fucking years later. And then he proceeds to do material that wasn't 7 years after the case kind of thing. It was like this was shit that he wrote while the trial was going on. And anyway, so I go to tell that story, and I'm at the Laugh Factory, and it's a crowd of 20-somethings, and I tell it to Dom, and I want to say Dom laughed, but it got nothing from the crowd. And then I'm just looking, going, all right, say like the average person here is 24. That means they were born in 1989. That means O.J., you know, I shouldn't even say, I mean, he got acquitted, right? I never understood that case. He got acquitted, but he still had to give everybody all his stuff. Like, they need more evidence to send you to jail for life, but, you know, to get all his stuff, including his Heisman trophy, all the other side just has to be like, I mean, come on. Yeah, I mean, you know he did it. Who else would have done it? And then it's like, you know, the end of the Wheel of Fortune. You're just like, all right, for slicing my daughter's throat, I'll take the dinette set for $700. That's disgusting, Bill. That was a disgusting joke. Well, fuck you. I got an hour to fill here. I'm talking to myself. What would you be talking about 6.5 minutes in? Exactly. Okay? So sit back down in your plastic Staples chair and you put your head down on your desk inside of your fucking cubicle. I don't hear another word out of you for the next fucking 53.5 minutes. Okay? I'm in no mood. I got a long podcast ahead of me, and the last thing I need is someone like you getting all fucking uppity next to your stapler. Anyways. Yeah, so I'm starting to feel my age. I mean, I look phenomenal, despite the top of my dome. From just below my hairline down, for my age, I look phenomenal. I do. Fuck you. I look great. All right, I've seen other 45-year-olds. It's not a pretty sight. And maybe it's because they got married and they had a bunch of kids, right? And they made them some omelets and the kids didn't finish it because they didn't have teeth yet. So then you got to eat their omelets too. And then you start walking sideways out of your house just trying to get through the door jam, right? You just start using momentum to get to your car, you know? You put your belly right on the fucking driver's side door, leaning against it. You know, like a heavyweight fighter trying to wear down his opponent. You're just leaning against your car as you're fiddling around trying to find your keys in your pocket. You literally have to take a break from carrying that bacon, egg, and cheese mass right in front of you. The fucking suspension digging in on the opposite side of the car, like when I try to tip my dog over, you know? I don't know how difficult cow tipping is, but trying to tip over a pit bull is practically impossible. They get low, and they put two of their bionic fucking legs on the opposite side of their body. And then they also have, like, webbed toes, and they just dig into the carpet. Isn't that right, Cleo? Huh? Dude, I got to put up this video of her snoring the other night, last night. She sounded like a fucking trucker who just got back from a fucking there-and-back trip across the country. Full of obbies, laying on her back, fucking face twitching, REM sleep, and just snoring. I don't know. I don't think she got sleep apnea. I don't know what her deal is. I fucking love her, though. So anyways, the hell was I just talking about? Oh, yes, looking good for my age, but I'm starting to feel it. Feeling it with the references. So the other day, I was working... the hell was I? I had an unbelievable weekend. I worked DC, New York, and Philly. And I'm backstage in New York City at the Beacon Theater. All right? Legendary theater. Just beyond anything I ever thought about. I used to go to Stand Up New York on the Upper West Side, and my whole fucking thing was just being able to get a spot there. First on a weekday, a scheduled spot, not to get thrown up, to actually have my name on the schedule. He has a 10:20, right? And then it became, can I do a weekend spot? But I'd get off the subway and I'd walk by that theater a zillion times and it never even dawned on me that a comedian could even fucking play a place like that. That's how far away that was. So
I hope if you were in the area, you had a chance to come down there, because both of those shows were, I don't know, that was something else. Something else. Right up there with Carnegie or any of those other things. And but there was something about the Beacon that just, it felt like, I don't know, felt like I was at the Cellar, like comfortable. It was awesome. So anyways, ah, Jesus Christ, I forgot what the fuck I was talking about. All right, let's back it up. It's how my brain works. It goes in a straight line. So I got to, you know, like when you miss an exit, you got to back up back in the day and you'd go back and look at the sign. Back of the car up. Or maybe you just pulled over and your dad got out all pissed off and left his family of five sitting on the side of the road waiting to be rear-ended. Well, people didn't text when they drove back then. So I guess it was normal, right? Shit, what the fuck was I talking about? I can't remember. I literally cannot remember anything that I said before. No, wait, I said a bad joke. OJ. Dinette set. Ah, Christ. And there it is. And then it just hits the fucking beach. And now here we are. We're in a fucking lull. I guess I was talking about eating like shit. You know, I was doing so well. I got myself down to about $170. You know? I'm watching that UFC, The Ultimate Fighter, right? I'm watching that this season. Everybody on the show is in shape. The women are fucking taking it to the next level. They're having some of the best fights of the season. And it's making me want to work out. And then I went on the road. And this is a funny thing. I went out with Verzi, right? And we're not drinking right now. We're on the wagon. Although I drank Wednesday and Thursday. But I still consider on the wagon. Wednesday, I got fucked up. And I paid for it the whole day. And I was like, this is stupid. How many times do I have to learn this lesson? I got to tell you guys, I went to the Rangers game, the Rangers-Penguins game on, what was that, Wednesday night? I got to tell you, what a fucking venue. You know, they redid the whole thing. Seriously, after going to the Clippers-Warriors game, just being in the Staples Center, because I really love L.A., and I don't look at the people like they're plastic, phony, or that type of shit. But I got to tell you, having gone to that game Sunday night and then gone to Madison Square Garden, just you could not compare the atmospheres. It was just fucking – I thought, can I stop saying that annoying word?
The atmosphere inside the stadium was just – it was electric. Yeah, I mean, you could feel there was something palpable in the air, the pyrrhic victory that was to come.
That was fucking amazing. There's just nothing like being in a stadium watching a team that has a history, albeit a tragic one, but has a history, and everybody just grew up watching them, and they know the history of the game. There's rivalries. You feel it, you know? It's like one of those home-cooked meals that gets better every time you reheat it, you know, like a beef stew, a gumbo. Let's throw that out there for the wonderful people down there in New Orleans. I actually got homesick, you know, last night when I watched a little bit of the Saints-Cowboys. I watched a little bit of the Saints-Cowboys game, and when they were shooting down the street, you know, they always play that New Orleans music and shit, and Al Michaels was sitting there talking about how they were shooting right down Canal Street, and I stayed there at the hotel. There was the hotel. There's the fucking Harrah's. There's the cigar bar, and I missed it. But I got to tell you, I ended up shutting off the game because I was so tired. And I ended up watching this documentary on Dr. J on the NBA channel. You guys got to see it. Of course, I don't know the name of it, but never made one like that. Never again, before or after. Just the combination. That guy was so fucking cool and so classy. And even to this day, you want to talk about a guy aging well, you know? They said that he can still dunk. And I'm not going to say whether or not he proves that he can still do it, but you definitely should watch the documentary of the shit that the guy was doing, especially all you guys from the Jordan era, or maybe the Kobe era, who just went just as far back as Michael Jordan. If you want to know how Michael existed or whatever, is because he got to, I mean, aside from obviously all his hard work and all that type of stuff, but he got to watch a guy like Dr. J, and they showed all the classic shit, his dunk on Michael Cooper, and then that one where in the 1980s finals where he drives baseline, jumps up in the air, and he's got the ball, I think maybe in the third row, sort of doing this sort of windmill thing, swooping around, and he's literally, his momentum carries him out of bounds. There's some giant white dude, and I don't know if it was Kareem or who else, just completely took away that side of the rim. It was over. So anybody else, even an all-star, maybe the best they could do is maybe look to see, find somebody open underneath the basket to pass it to him, or do the playground thing where you try to throw it off a defensive player and it's out on them, right? But instead, he just keeps flying through the air. All right, there's two tall people blocking this side of the rim. I think I'll just keep gliding through the air. I'm starting to come down, so I'll pull my legs up a little bit, give myself a little more hang time. Comes back all the way to the other side of the basket. Everything but probably, you know, his halfway to his right forearm down to the tip of his fingers is out of bounds the other way. And he just reaches back inbounds at the last second and puts like a reverse spin on the ball for a reverse layup on the other side. I can't explain it. And it goes by so fucking fast. You have to watch it in slow motion. They got that. They got all the ABA highlights and the stuff. They were giving away, like, they had a dollar night or something like that at Nassau Coliseum where the New York Nets played when he was in the ABA. And it was a dollar a ticket. 9,000 people showed up. And if you showed up, not only was your ticket only a dollar, they gave away a free loaf of bread. So then you start to see all that Will Ferrell semi-pro stuff. It's awesome, man. I'm actually looking it up right now. Dr. J documentary. I guess it's just called The Doctor. Watch NBA TV's The Doctor full documentary. Jesus Christ, it's already up online. These fucking sons of bitches. Definitely check it out. And then they got all his awesome commercials. With all the fucking 70s music. They had this one that goes, "Hey, hey, Dr. J, where'd you get those moves? You move with such grace. Are you a member of the human race?" They literally go, "Are you a member of the human race?" Like, you, political correctness would never let you get away from that with the underlying racist comments. What they were really trying to say was, we've never seen anybody play like that. But, you know, those Aryan cunts, of course, would be like, you know, "That's exactly what we were saying," right? I guess the Nazi guys would talk like that, right? Do you actually have like a bad German accent like I just did? But you got to see it. But you got to watch that commercial. I'm gonna put a link up for that, because then the dude, the second verse that they don't show in the documentary, he goes up into that fucking 70s falsetto. It's the shit. Nia loved it. She like was like memorizing the song and was walking around our house singing it last night. Which is why I love her. All right, so there's that. So definitely check out The Doctor on the NBA channel. Watch it on the NBA channel. All right, help out that zillion-dollar business with their mobbed-up refs. So anyways, where the hell are we? Oh, my God, where did the last fucking 12 minutes go? It just really flies by when you're having fun. Okay, time to do a little bit of advertising. All right, everybody, here we go. Bill's going to try to read out loud once again this week. Is there any improvement? Any improvement? Ah, fuck, I'm already throwing it off the rails. All right, here we go. Focusing, taking our time, relaxing, maybe going a little slower, letting it breathe. Dollar Shave Club, everyone. For a couple of bucks a month, DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing quality razors right to your door. Not only does it save you a ton of cash, it saves you from trudging to the drugstore for a pack of blades. I always get stuck behind the lady, paying with all the loose change from the cat from the car ashtray. Actually, that's not true. I get stuck behind the people who want to not only buy some, stuff for their dentures. They also want to develop some film and buy some ice cream. And the place I go to, you know, only has like two employees, so that one person has to do all of it. So that's who I get stuck behind. But let's pretend it is me. It's like she thinks exact change is a requirement. I'm a patient person, but heck,
I came in with scruff. Now I'm leaving with a full beard. But now, with Dollar Shave Club for just a couple of bucks a month, amazing quality razor blades are delivered right to your door. That's right. No more wasting time and no more getting hit up for 20 bucks every time you buy razors. Everybody here is getting their Dollar Shave Club blades, and you should too. And here's a genius idea. Try replacing your old shaving cream with Dr. Cavi's Easy Shave Butter from the DollarShaveClub.com. Trust me, your face will thank you later. Don't waste time at the drugstore behind the lady paying in pennies. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/Burr or go to BillBurr.com and click on the Dollar Shave Club banner. Keep your stress level low and your bank account high. Shave time, shave money. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/Burr. All right, just for the record, I think I screwed up three times. That's not bad. Let's see if I can drop my – this is like golfing. See if I can take a stroke off on this one. E-voice. If you are an entrepreneur, two things keep you up at night: increasing revenue and controlling expenses. What about the gold-digging whore sleeping next to you? E-voice is a simple technology that helps you do both. How? Let's start with revenue. E-voice helps you make sure that everyone who calls your business is treated like gold. You get your own toll-free or local number. You can set up a dial-by-name directory or have calls instantly routed anywhere. Your cell phone, your house, your partner or assistant, or all of the above. E-voice even transcribes your voicemails and emails them directly to you, so you can prioritize when and how to respond without interrupting your workflow. With e-voice, you can never leave money on the table. Just go to the podcast page at BillBurr.com and click on the e-voice banner, or go to evoice.com/BillBurr. Damn it! E-voice also cuts your expenses by acting as your business phone system and your receptionist. The technology could save your business hundreds of thousands of dollars. E-voice starts at only 10 bucks per month. And for that, plus you can get a toll-free... Plus, you can get free 30-day trial right now when you go to the podcast page at BillBurr.com and click on the eVoice banner, or eVoice.com BillBurr/BillBurr. That's my website, BillBurr.com, and click on the eVoice banner or to eVoice.com/BillBurr. You got to be kidding me. I was like 3/4 of the way. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have a perfect game. And then I messed up once. I'm like, well, I'm still going to beat 3. Then I had 2, and then I'm like, don't blow it. God damn it. So that was 3 again. Let's do one more here. Let's see if I can only make 2 screw-ups. I'll have to go a little slower. Put a little more twinkle in my eye. Hulu Plus, everyone. You've probably tried Hulu.com. Now with Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Hulu Plus lets you watch thousands of hit TV shows and a selection of acclaimed movies on your television or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. And it all streams in HD for the best viewing experience. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite current TV shows like Saturday Night Live, Community, and Family Guy. You can also check out exclusive content, including Hulu originals like The Awesomes, starring SNL's Seth Meyers, and Moon Boy, starring Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids. Hulu Plus also offers a great selection of acclaimed films. For only $7.99 a month, you can stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, wherever you want. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/Bill. That's a special offer for my listeners only. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/Bill so you can get an extended free trial and they know we sent you. Go to HuluPlus.com/Bill now or click the Hulu Plus banner on the podcast page at BillBurr.com. All right, I think that was only 2 mess-ups, possibly 3. All right. Anyways, let's get back to the old podcast, Rooney. There. So, as I mentioned, this week they had the New York Comedy Festival, which was why I was at the I was in New York City working at the Beacon Theater. This was my weekend. I worked Dark Constitution Hall, where Eddie Murphy taped Delirious. And Chris Rock did, I think, Never Scared or Shoot the Messenger. I forget which one. So I got to work that place. And then I did the Beacon, you know, which is the Beacon. And then I got to do the Tower Theater in Philly. So it was insane. It was absolutely insane. And as if my week couldn't have gotten any better. Because it was the New York Comedy Festival, there was all these big-name comics –
that were in town, and Bill Cosby was working at the theater down in Madison Square Garden, and it was on my bucket list. You know, I got to see this guy. I saw Carlin. I never saw Pryor. I have to see Bill Cosby. I saw Don Rickles earlier this year, and, you know, there's a lot of people that I should have seen throughout my career, and I never did because I was too busy trying to get better myself, and I was always like, I'm going to see him, I'm going to see him, I'm going to see him. And like I never saw Carlin when I was actually a stand-up comic where I could have appreciated him even more. I saw him in, I told you this story before, I'll tell it again real quick. Me and a buddy of mine saw him at the Cape Cod Melody Tent, and we actually went down there to laugh at him, if you can believe it, because my buddy had convinced me that he was still doing his more stuff bit, that he hadn't changed up his stuff. So we were driving to the venue, drinking and laughing, going, more stuff. Like, we just were like, we're going to go down there. We actually used to go out. Like, I went and I saw a live taping of the Morton Downey Jr. show. We would go out to go see stuff like that, to enjoy it and also laugh at the people that thought it was great stuff. Morton Downey Jr. was great, but come on, it was a shit show, right? We saw Dice. We loved Dice. We saw him at the Worcester Central. We didn't go down there to laugh at him by any stretch of the means. We went down there to fucking laugh our balls off, and we did. Saw him at the Worcester Centrum. But we went to go see Carlin. We went down there to laugh at him, think he was going to do all his old material. And, of course, we go there, and he had a brand-new killer hour, and he was 10 times the comic that he was the last special, just how he just kept growing throughout his whole career. So anyways, but I never saw him when I was an actual stand-up comic. I saw him when I wasn't a comic, so all I knew was this guy was funny as hell. So anyways, long story short, I was flying to New York, and they had an article in the New York Post that said that Cosby was in town, and he was doing the festival. So I called up, and I asked if there was any way I could stand in the back and blah, 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 and just check him out. And they hooked me up. And they actually got me to the side of the stage, and I was thinking, oh, maybe he'll just walk by and I'll get to shake his hand. No, I don't want to bug him. I don't want to bug him. So I go backstage, and of course, there's like 40 people standing there because you want to go, you got to see Bill Cosby. So I'm standing there, and then this woman goes, hey, you want to go up and meet him? And I was like, meet who? And she was, and I'm like, Cosby? And she was like, yeah. So she starts walking up towards his dressing room, and it's like I had fucking mud, and I'm walking in mud. Like I was afraid. So I'm walking, I'm going, are you sure it's okay? Are you sure it's okay? Because this wasn't somebody running the festival. This was just like a PA that was bringing me up there. And it's right before he's going on. And I'm thinking like, it just didn't seem like this was going to happen. So she walks up, knocks on his door. I hear somebody say, come in. That's not him. And they open the door, and there he is sitting there with one other guy. And so I walk in thinking I'm going to get an intro from the PA, and she just closes the door behind me. So now I'm standing there. It's me, this other dude, and Bill Cosby. The other two are sitting down, and I'm standing up. And Cosby looks up at me, and he just goes, who are you? And immediately my heart is pounding. I'm like, I'm Bill Burr. I'm a stand-up comedian. And he interrupts and he just goes, and why are you here? So now I'm going like, oh my God, this is the fucking nightmare. I didn't want to come up here. I didn't want to bug him. I was tongue-tied. There was nothing. Why am I here? I don't know why I'm here. I didn't ask to come up here. She just fucking dragged me. So it's three excruciating seconds after he said, and why are you here? And I'm just sitting there with my jaw on the ground. And then he finally lets me off the hook. And he goes, you are here because I asked you to be. And then he motions to a chair and goes, sit down. So I sit down. He had no idea who I was. I think he knew that I was a comedian. But I sat down. And immediately I just had this fucking ear-to-ear grin on my face that I couldn't wipe away. And I just, as I was sitting down, I was like, I got to tell you, this is like meeting the Pope. And he goes, yes, but way more entertaining. I can't do it the way he did. He just had me laughing. And he proceeded to just start talking to me about how excited he was about his new special and about the way that he shot the thing and the artistic way. He's like, you have to see this thing. And he was saying there's no crowd shots. He goes, I don't want the camera on my crowd. He goes, leave my people alone. Let them laugh if they think it's funny. He goes, I don't want the camera on them. And then they get self-conscious and they feel like they have to. And he imitates their laugh and he does that Cosby. Did that thing. It was insane. So then he goes, I'm going to tell you something about shooting a special. And then he looks at the other guy. He goes, I don't think I should tell him this. You know what? I'm going to tell it. I'm going to tell it to him. And he turns to talk to me. And right then the door opens and the PA comes back and goes, Mr. Cosby, are you ready? And he goes, oh, yes, of course. And he stands up and he walks out. So I never got to hear that the secret of shooting a special from a guy who I think, you know, I've said this before. I feel like Richard Pryor live in concert and Bill Cosby himself run the entire gamut of it's like two perfect games. I can't explain it. And it's just one just absolutely like Cosby's just totally clean. Other than he says asshole one time, but it's totally necessary. It's just not an ounce of fat in that special, just wire to wire. He's just sitting down, killing, not cursing, just like you couldn't do it any better as far as just a written special, all the way to Pryor live in concert, which is just like, I don't know how to describe that style. Just open, free, going off. Not like you don't have your bits, but like those nights when you're just on as a comic and you're just tagging every joke and a 3-minute joke becomes a 5-minute joke and a 5-minute joke becomes a 12-minute joke. And then the next time you do your set, you're thinking about how you did it the last time. So you're in your head. And then your 3-minute joke that became a 5-minute joke now becomes a 1-minute joke. And you burn through an hour of material in 17 minutes. And you're on stage going, what the fuck happened? Anyways, those are the two perfect things. So anyways, then he goes downstairs and he walks out on stage and just sits down. He has like a, you can't even see it. It's like this clear mic that almost like he would be like typing into on a keyboard. So it's hands-free kind of thing. And he sits down almost like a catcher. And he's just like he's sitting down on a stoop and just does like an hour. He was only doing like, there was a number of comics that were on it. But he just sits down and like he did 30 years ago when I saw him or whenever the hell it was. Yeah, it was 30 years ago. Just absolutely, just total command of the crowd. I've never seen anything like it. But there were so many people backstage talking and that type of thing that I still have to go see that guy live because I hear they said when he did his special, he did two shows, both 90 minutes, both all different material. And I brought that up to him when I was talking to him real quickly. I still can't believe I'm saying this. Yeah, when I was talking to Bill Cosby and he said he just was humble. He goes, well, you know, I've been doing this for like 50 years. I should have that much material, wouldn't you think? And it's just like, yeah, but that's all relevant. You know? Don't you have any topical stuff that you have to throw out? I mean, it's just unbelievable. So he's touring. He's out there. He's part of one of the last ones from a generation that taught the rest of us how to do it. So if he comes to your town, I can't recommend it enough to go out and go see that guy. But so that was my week. You know? That doesn't suck, does it? I don't think so. So what else did I do? Let's talk about some of the shit I did with New Jersey's own Paul Verzi. You know, I'm actually rooting against the Giants, not because I hate him, but because Paul Verzi said when they were 0-6 that they were going to go on a run. Remember I said that? You know, I got a feeling, you know, they could turn, you know. So
It's not that I don't want to see the Giants go on a run. It's just I don't want to listen to Paul tell me that he called it for the next 6 years. Okay? The fact that he's still talking about Cano and all that, I don't need another thing. Him going like, ah, like when we're both, like when I'm 60 and he's 50. I don't want to be listening to him talking about the 2013 regular fucking season. That they could go on a run and blah, 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 blah. And also, just having watched the Giants, you know, win against the Patriots in the Super Bowl twice when the Patriots had them and they let them off the hook. Now, I'm not taking away from the Giants because the Giants still had to fucking deliver. And Jesus Christ, did they? And they all stepped up and they all made a play where we didn't. Where Asante Samuel dropped a fucking interception, you know, and we Brady to Welker 6 yards fucking completion that would have gone for a first down and the game is over and you leave the door open for them. They are just a blessed team. The fact that you can go 0-6, okay, and then win your next two games and only be two games out in a 16-game season, they have a horseshoe buried so far up their fucking ass. Like, they literally, they could actually win their division starting 0-6. Starting 0-6 as a football team is basically, that would be like losing your first 50 games as a baseball team, going like 0-50. Okay, because what, 0-8 is half the season. So 0-6, I can't, I'm not doing the math. I can't even do the math. We'll say that's 40% of the season. There's 162 games. That's 40. We'll just go 40 and 40. That's like losing your first 70. Ah, gee, I don't fucking know. It's like losing a bunch of fucking games, and then somehow not only do you go on a run, you win your division. It's insane. Wait, did the Cowboys win last night? I got to look it up. I started watching that Dr. J documentary. They were playing the Saints. I'm going to guess no. Saints at home. Let's see. Cowboys. Saints. This is entertaining, right? Listening to some douchebag look up a score. And I'm going to say the Saints won. Jesus, did they ever. 49-17. What the fuck? So now they're 5-5. No, fuck this. I got to look it up. Dude, this is fucking hilarious. NFL. Let's get me to NFL.com. Official website. Standings. Here we go. Standings. What are they, a game up now? The Giants are 3-6. So they're two out. They're two games back. That's fucking hilarious. They're actually tied with the Redskins. The Washington Redskins, you ought to be ashamed of yourselves. You ought to be ashamed of yourselves. Jesus Christ. They went 0-6. The Giants went 0-6, and it only took them 9 games to catch you. Oh, wow, that's depressing. We're already 9 games into this fucking season. Ah, fuck, it just goes by too fast. It's already November. Unbelievable, but thank God there's hockey. And I'm actually kind of into the NBA this year. I don't know, but it's very hard to stay up on both those leagues because there's so many games and they play like their seasons just completely overlap each other. Have you noticed that? There's baseball, football. Like, people are either baseball, football, basketball, or baseball, football, hockey. You know, if you're going to go, if you're going to try to watch as much as you can. And then you throw in the golf. And you got to watch Wimbledon, right? I mean, no wonder the years are flying by and your wife has that angry look on her face. You know, it's just flying. Oh, another one you guys got to watch. Watch the Pat Summerall documentary, A Football Life on Pat Summerall. That's another one. Just amazing, you know, and made me feel good about my drinking considering the way people used to go back in the day. Dude, the last Super Bowl, I forget the guy, it was before my time, that Pat Summerall was paired up with before John Madden. It was just like an open joke that they used to go out boozing, like kind of like in a Dean Martin kind of way. Let's see, Pat Summerall broadcast team, broadcast partner. There we go. Let's see if I can find it. Oh, Tom Brookshire, was that the guy's name?
Yeah, I think it was Tom Brookshire. And they actually, before Super Bowl 13, the second time the Cowboys and the Steelers met up, they came on the air and both looked like shit and talked about how they'd been there since Tuesday. The game was on Sunday or something, how they'd been there since Tuesday and how they felt like they had been there for 9 years and were just basically openly admitting that they were fucking hungover and felt like shit. It was insane. So those are two documentaries to watch. Oh, by the way, I had a great, great fucking time when I was in Philly. Whenever I drive to Philly down from New York, by the time I get into Philadelphia, I absolutely fucking hate the city. I just hate the fact that you just can't seem to get off the goddamn Jersey Turnpike. I always take that exit 5. I always take the wrong one. I got to weave my way through like 12 suburban towns going by a goddamn gazebo to go to a major city. It's a major city. You got 4 major fucking teams. I don't understand why they don't have some fucking throughway where I can continue to drive 70 miles an hour and get to Philly in no time whatsoever. I know I'm taking the wrong one. I should take that one that's the 30 that you go over the Ben Franklin Bridge. But I went over that other one. Exit 5, where you end up going over like that fucking footbridge. Then you're pissed and you get there and it's like 12 one ways and going in the same direction. Then another one going the other way. And you're like, my hotel's right fucking there. How do I get to it? And you're pissed. But then you see Mitchell and Ness and all the great food. And then you're walking around. You have a great time. So anyways, we went and we did the shows at the Tower Theater. Crowds were awesome. Just fucking awesome. And oh, and you know what was awesome too? Was some woman came to the first show, and as I was walking off stage, like handed me a loaf of pumpkin bread because I mentioned I was talking shit about how good my pumpkin bread was. So she hands me this loaf of pumpkin bread as I'm getting off stage. And I'm laughing like, because I know why she gave it to me. And I'm walking upstairs and she has it wrapped very professionally. Like she has cellophane around it. And then she has this plastic bag over that with a twist tie. And now I'm going upstairs and I walk by the guy. I go, look at this. Somebody made me some pumpkin bread. And, you know, there's no barcode on it. There's no governmental shit. This stuff has not gone through any sort of stuff whatsoever. So I say to the guy backstage, I go, You got a rat problem back here? Can I feed a piece of this to a rat and just see what happens to the rat? Like a little food test thing before I bite into this, make sure there's no weed in it or any shit like that. And whatever. So I went upstairs and I was just like, I got to try it. And I hope the person who made it is listening. It was fucking outstanding. Outstanding. I'm not going to say it was better than mine. That's like saying Cosby's better than Pryor. Our pumpkin breads are both coexisting in that stratosphere. And it would just really be a personal preference. I got to tell you, whoever made it and handed it to me, it was outstanding. Verzi had some too. And was like, it's like I couldn't throw it out. Actually, Paul took it home to his family. So I hope the drugs or whatever you did to it aren't in the middle of it because he has kids. But it was fucking delicious. So thank you very much for that. It's very nice of you. And speaking of battling, which is better? My pumpkin bread, your pumpkin bread. All right, you're in Philly. You don't live there. Or even if you do live there, how do you end a great night? Come on. You got to go to Geno's or Pat's for fucking steak and cheeses, right? And I'm sure the people in Philly, oh, fuck both those places, you're a fucking tourist trap. You need to go to Uncle Fucky's over here. But whatever. For an out-of-town guy, that's what I did. So I go down there, and first he's going, so what should we do? Should we do Pat's or Geno's? And I'm like, well, fuck it. Why don't we go, we'll get one of each. Then we'll cut them in half, and we'll trade, mix and match, do a little surf and turf, and see which one we like better. So, of course, we go to Pat's first, and we order it. And it's just one giant fucking steak and cheese sub. And they don't even have a plastic knife for you to cut it up. All they have is a spoon for I don't know what. If you get cheese fries or something. So Virgie's got to tear it in half. And I go over to, we're standing in line at Geno's. I'm eating half of one of Pat's, right? I got one wit. is what we got. And, dude, it was fucking delicious. Fucking delicious. So then I go to the Gino's place. Same deal. We ordered another one. And as I go up there, I know I'd been there before, but I never noticed the sign there on Gino's where it says, he's got two signs. One says, I'm mad as hell. I want my country back. And it's a picture of the original owner. I really don't want to fuck this up. Joey Vento. And it's a picture of him basically on with a picture of just the lower 48. I love how he blows off Alaska and Hawaii. He wants his country back. And then below that, there's a picture that says, this is America. When ordering, speak English. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, man. That's like some old school Bronx Tale Archie Bunker shit. And I saw it and I was like, it was funny to me because there was this table of like five Latino people standing around speaking Spanish or whatever, eating the food. And I'm like, wow, that is a testament to how good your fucking food is, where you can just like openly insult somebody like that. And, well, I guess they spoke English too because they did order. I don't fucking know. I'm just saying that your food is so good that you could be like insulting that much, openly insulting. And, people still order it. So I looked it up, and there's this whole thing where this guy, Joey Vento's son, Joey Vento passed away, and his son took over the business, and I guess it was this guy's dying wish to keep the speak English sign at Gino's still up there. I'll read you the article real quickly here. It said, last week, Eatery Philly ran a photo of rapper Busta Rhymes hanging out at Gino's Steaks in South Philly. This was all well and good, but what really caught our interest was an update to the item explaining that the Speak English sign is still being proudly displayed at Gino's because it preserves, because its preservation was what late owner Joey Vento, Jesus Christ, I'm sorry guys, because its preservation was late owner Joey Vento's dying wish. Gino recently retained Neff Associates, the same public relations firm that began handling the Joe's, oh, yeah, the Joe's vs. Chink's racist cheesesteak drama. Oh, this is a PR firm. Neff PR director Kyle Flett explains the Gino sign situation in an email today. He says, as you know, Gino's is under new management since the passing of Joey Vento. Gino Vento, Joey's openly gay son, is the new owner and operator. And I think it's important to inform you that he does not share all of the polarizing views his father was famous for. I think it's also important for you to know that we have retained Joe's Steaks, blah, 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 blah. Whatever. I guess it was this guy's dying wish. His dad's dying wish was to keep it up there, so his son sort of caught in the middle. I don't know. It's actually an almost like an interesting piece of history, where they have like colored bathroom only, where you just kind of see how far we've come yet haven't come that far. I don't know. It was pretty, takes a lot to kind of shock me. I was just like, Jesus Christ. And then I felt like, well, fuck this place. I don't want to eat here. I'll just eat at the other place. And I just heard, well, that's owned by the same family. I don't know. For the record, I like Pat's better on that night. So it might be one of those nights where any given night, but they're both absolutely delicious. So then I had to look up this, the Joe's vs. Chink's racist cheesesteak drama. So I look up this one. By the way, all of this shit is making me feel much better about being from the Boston area, because we seem to get, like, other than the South, like when you talk about racist cities in the North, people always talk about Boston. And I guess there was a place that's now called like Joe's Steaks and whatever. Oh, Jesus. Where the fuck is the thing? Where's the article here? Okay. Philly is renaming a cheesesteak shop that used to be called Chink's. All right. Philadelphia, capital city of the United States, is great at many things. It's great at being within a relatively short drive. Unfortunately, two topics it is yet to master are race relations and nuance, which is why its residents are freaking out that a Philly cheesesteak shop known since 1949 as Chink's Steaks has just changed its name to Joe's Steaks and Soda Shop. Chink's was named for its original owner, whose name wasn't Chink, but who, boy, did he look like one, according to his grade school classmates. The Philadelphia Inquirer notes that the late Samuel Chink Sherman, so some guy named Sam Sherman, had almond-shaped eyes, so everybody called him Chink. Folks in the shop's neighborhood understand why someone somewhere at some point maybe could find the well-known racial slur inappropriate, but they stop just short of admitting that it actually is. And because nothing flavors meat like a couple of decades of racism, they're pissed that Chink's no longer exist. Here's a sampling of some of the best lines of complaints. Back then, ethnic slurs slipped off the tongue as smoothly as melted American cheese. Cracker Barrel hasn't had to change their name. I mean, that could be made into a racist thing. Others said the passing of Chink's symbolized the neighborhood's decline. If the shop had been named with a slur against blacks, that would be offensive, said Terrell Jenkins, a 44-year-old African-American man, but Chink was a nickname. It could have been a term of endearment. See, that's the one thing that I've learned about travel. It's just people just give a shit about themselves. So there's an African-American guy. You'd think he'd have empathy. He doesn't give a fuck. It's not coming in his direction. So he's, you know, it could have been a term of endearment. He sounds like a white dude at that point. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of back in the day, one of those, you know, England, they have that stupid royalty, these kings and queens and duchess and dukes, and they just, all this pomp and circumstance. I guess they don't make any decisions over there. But God knows, I haven't really read up on it, so what the fuck do I know? But anyways, they had some sort of polo club over there, and there was some Middle Eastern guy who was a member, and I think he was one of the only Middle Eastern guys. Everybody else was these, you know, blue blood guys that all, you know, the incestuous fucking, so they all have weird ears and fucked up looking faces like Prince Charles, you know? And their nickname for him was Sooty. They called him Sooty. So that got out, and the Pakistanian guy, whatever the hell his name, whatever ethnicity he was, he said, like, oh no, it was a term of endearment. I don't mind. I just love, like, that's such like a blue blood Rothschild level, like Sooty, you know, like the soot from your chimney, from the giant fireplace in your fucking manor. You know, no one thinks about soot anymore. First of all, most houses don't even have fireplaces anymore. You can't even use them unless you buy an old one that's grandfathered in. You know, then they have these old fucking whatever the next style house up from a manor is. You know that one that they shoot it from the air and it looks like a public library, except the grounds are so fucking gorgeous. All the hedgerows, to quote Led Zeppelin, if there's a something in your hedgerow. So it was just fascinating for me to read this. Like, I don't know. It just reminded me, this was like 1950s level sort of racism. Like they're reading just shit and kind of being in that environment. I was surprised that there weren't some people with their hair greased back standing around a like burning trash can singing doo-wop. Had a very Bronx Tale sort of vibe to it. So, but having said that, those racist sons of bitches make some great food. They really do. And I've only ate there one time, so I'm not going to pass judgment other than to say my experience that night, Pat's got the leg up. All right. But that's a divisional rivalry. So they play each other twice in one season. So I got to go back and have another game down there. It was fucking delicious. And I don't regret a second of putting that poison into my body. The fucking bread was delicious. The cheese whiz, all of that toxic, horrific shit that my body is probably still trying to process and decide where it should put it in my body. I'm telling you right now, I would do it again tonight. And I just had it two nights ago. It was fucking
delicious. So thumbs up on the cuisine, thumbs down on the ignorant thought, but leaving the sign up, I definitely think the name of the place, if it's racist, you should get rid of it. But there was something about leaving the sign up that, I don't know. To me, I looked at more it as like a museum. Like, this was the guy, and he was beloved in the neighborhood, yet he thought this way. He had another sign that they actually took down. It said, "Real Americans don't press number two," which was a reference to, you know, if you'd like English, press one. A primo numero dos. You know, there's always the fucking prima, whatever the fuck they say, is the Spanish. That one to me was actually funny. I don't condone it or whatever, but it was at least clever sort of racism. I just love that whole philosophy. You know, give me back. I want my country back. And that's the same fucking guy that if a Native American came up, you know, and said, "I want my country back," like, you know, this guy would immediately go into some sort of, I would imagine, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I imagine he would go on some sort of fucking rant about how Native Americans were savages, you know, as we systematically fucking wiped them out like a bunch of fucking savages. So whatever. It was really interesting. And it was delicious food. Okay. Let's get to some more advertising. Then I got to get to the questions over there. All right, here we go. Let's see if I can improve on two screw-ups. LegalZoom, everybody. There are two reasons, not one, but two reasons, why now is the perfect time to start your own business. Reason number one, the economy is picking up, and the longer you wait, the longer you delay your potential success. Reason number two, right now you can incorporate your business or form an LLC at LegalZoom.com for just $99. LegalZoom's online process guides you step by step, and you get total customer support. It couldn't be much easier. LegalZoom provides self-help services at your specific direction and can connect you to an attorney, but they are not a law firm. So you save a pile of money. That's four strokes against me. Get an extra discount when you enter Burr in the referral box at checkout. I went into the water. Don't wait on the sidelines while others are taking charge of their futures. Now is the best time to get in the game and launch your business. Don't put this off. For incorporation, trademarks, patents, and more, just go to LegalZoom.com right now. Discount code BIRD. BIRD. That's LegalZoom.com. Discount code BIRD. Good Lord. That was like the shark when he blew the Masters. That was terrible. If LegalZoom doesn't pay me this week, I understand. All right, let's see if I can go Nick Faldo on this one. Stamps.com, everyone. Postage meter companies used to have the monopoly on printing postage. They could charge you an arm and a leg to print postage from your own office. But those days are over. Now you can use Stamps.com instead. With Stamps.com, get all the benefits of a postage meter, but at a fraction of the cost. All you need is your computer, printer, and Stamps.com to get official U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail. Plus, you'll never have to step inside a crowded post office again. Everything you would want to do at the post office, you can do right at home from your own desk. It's so convenient. I use Stamps.com to send out my posters, my DVDs, my t-shirts, whatever I'm whoring myself out with selling that week. And if I can figure out how to do it, someone as dumb as me, you can too. Right now, use my last name, Burr, B-U-R-R, for this special offer. No risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer. It includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Burr, B-U-R-R, that's Stamps.com, enter Burr. All right, that was only one screw up. His last chance to try to win a major, or they'll always say he could never win the big one. Vista Print, everyone. A business card says a lot about you and your business. Are you a hardworking landscaper? A hip and funky salon owner? A loyal dog walker? No matter who you are or what kind of business you have, Vistaprint.com has thousands of designs to say just what you want. And today, we just got word of a great offer on their best business cards. Get 250 of their premium cards for only $10. The shipping is on them too. I created my cards the other day, and I have to say I was impressed at how easy it was. First, you choose the design you want. Pick your industry. There are over 20. Or you select a style instead, like bold, conservative, modern, or retro. Whatever you want, they got it. They even have a personal and family section if you're looking to create a contact on a mommy card. Vistaprint has so many designs to choose from that you're bound to find one that says exactly what you want, just the way you want. I even stumbled across a henna tattoo card. These guys really think of everything. Once you find a card you like, the design process itself is super easy and fun. Add text, photos, or logos. You can even change colors, fonts, and move things around. You can be an artist. So again, that's 250 high-quality premium cards with shipping included. Just go to www.vistaprint.com. Click on the Heard Us on TV/radio button in the upper right-hand corner and put in the promotional code BURR, B-U-R-R. As you check out, make sure you take a look at the other marketing products they offer, like postcards, flyers, brochures, and websites. They even match your business cards. Oh, they can even match your business cards. Excuse me. Get 250 premium business cards for $10, including shipping. Just go to www.vistaprint.com. Click on the Heard Us on TV/radio button in the upper right-hand corner and put in the promotional code BURR, B-U-R-R. Wow, that was brutal. I just really went off the rails. Okay, let's close that forever. Don't need to see that. Okay, on to the questions. Answer the question. All right. Oh, by the way, for all you Alabama fans, congratulations, you fucking assholes. That really devastated me. Oh, we had you. I really think if we scored that first touchdown, it would have been a different thing. You got to protect the fucking ball. You know, and then all of a sudden they just get, the discipline just went out the window and they completely went off the rails. You know, and I just have to say Nick Saban just completely outclassed the way his players played and all that. And it's absolutely devastating, you fucking cunts. All right, there. You happy? Okay, should I say yes? Bill, I'm a 16-year-old virgin guy from Texas and really want to go balls deep in a snatch before college. Jesus Christ, dude. Rub one out before you text me next time or email me. Homecoming is in a week, and this girl who I talked to a lot last year doesn't have a date because her date didn't want to pay the $150. All right, you got yourself a wounded bird. Things are looking good so far. When this year started, we haven't talked, and I've never texted her. I don't know where she texted me. I didn't even have her number. Immediately, I knew it was going to be about homecoming because it was all about people we were talking about because it was all people we were talking about that week. She asked me to go with her, but in a way that made me think she was using me so that she doesn't go alone. Yeah, there is a bit of that. She's definitely desperate, you know? You're kind of like the third string quarterback, and they both went down, so they're sticking you in there. So I know what you're saying. Is she going to let me throw the deep ball, or am I just going to have to go in there and take a fucking knee, right? Or hand it off, go in the I formation or the wishbone. Anyways, he said, there's a pretty good chance I would get laid if I went. I told her I would think about it. Then she offered to pay for the mum and the food. What is the mum? Does she really want to go with me? Should I say yes in the hopes that I get to slam her cunt? You know, dude, I really can't figure you out. It's like you're acting like a virgin by not saying yes to this layup, and then you're just really talking about her in a really disrespectful way. This girl is an angel, all right? The fact that she's going to give it up to a fucking 16-year-old virgin, show a little bit of respect. But you might be also, this might be your insecurity that you are a virgin, so you're trying to talk really aggressively about something that you might have a little bit of fear about. I have no idea. Look, this is what you should do. If you're going to go with this girl, be a fucking sweetheart. All right? Make her laugh. Fucking dance her around the dance floor. Have a great goddamn time. And if the opportunity presents itself, have at it. All right? But that's how you go into it. I mean, she's already paying for it. What kind of a fucking man? I mean, I guess you're a pimp at this point. A pimp virgin. You don't see that very often. Whatever you're doing, it seems to be working. But I just have a little more respect for her. That's all I'm saying. All right? Go in there. Have a good time. All right? What's that? What is that? What's that John Madden speech that Joe Bartnick always quotes? Tonight, today will be the greatest day of your life, but only if you win. So good luck, man. I hope you win. All right? There you go. But be respectful. God damn it. All right, car purchase process. Hey there, Bill McRedbeard in Balls. McRedbeard in Balls. I like that. It's kind of like a law firm. Love the podcast and love the stand-up. Have tickets to see you in D.C. tonight. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. I had a phenomenal time. He said, my question is about your car purchase process. When you bought your Prius, did you do it celebrity style and send one of your cronies with a Scrooge McDuck style money bag over to the dealership, then have it delivered to your place? Or did you go in old school and negotiate face to face? Were you one of those assholes who bicker over $100, or did you just buy the whole shebang and make some poor sap sales guy's day? I ask because I've been selling cars for 10 years. I find that the people who dicker over the smallest amount of money are usually the most miserable cunts during and after the sale, while the people who pay the most are the happiest customers. Happiest customers I have, and send me all their friends and family. Fellow ginger and sleazy car salesman. All right, so you own up to it that you're robbing those people. I tried to haggle over the price, and I was buying the Prius when gas prices were like four something a gallon back in like 2007. So they couldn't keep those things on the lot. So I was just like, this is my offer. Take it or leave it. And they're like, well, we're going to leave it. And I'm like, I'm walking out. I'm out of here. And they're like, all right, see ya. And I needed a car and I was renting one. That was the thing. If I had another car, if I actually had a car that I could drive away with instead of a rental that was costing me money. So I just said, all right, fuck it. I'll just pay it and I'll go do some more stand-up gigs. But just personally speaking, if you can't knock any money off of the car just because you know that they are fucking you over, you know, one of my buddies does it the best, and he is also a salesman, and he looks down on car salesmen. He looks at you guys like hack comedians as far as like being salesmen. He thinks you're the lowest of the low. Now, listen, that's not my thought. That's just his. He just calls them up and says the car that he wants and the price that he's going to pay. And he says, I'm calling four other dealerships. You have till noon to get back to me. He does it something like that. And they get back to him and he gets it for the price that he wants because it's a guaranteed sale. He's like, I'm buying a car today. And these dealerships, they can't resist that. So I oversimplified it because I'm not totally informed on, I always forget how it goes down. So I can't intelligently present what the fuck it is that he does, but that's the way he does it. But anyways, I'm actually, you know, thinking about buying Nia a nice car. So if any car salesman out there can give me some tips and present the ins and outs about how much they do more. Because, you know, I've heard all that stuff like the sales slip on the side of the car, the price up at the top is what the dealership pays, and that the dealership doesn't pay for any of the options and that type of thing, which doesn't seem right to me. I feel like they must get a discount on the options. What is the discount? And I also know that they need to make money. So what's a good – let's just say if I'm going to go buy a $30,000 car, all right, and if I look at the sheet, it came in at 22 or 24. Just say 24, and it's got $6,000 worth of fucking options or something like that. I don't even know if those numbers make sense. If you're a car salesman, like, where should I be? Should I be in the middle of that? Should I be at 24? Where should I be? Let me know, and I'll read it on to other people. All right. So I guess, and to answer your question, I was the guy who just kind of paid. I'm not a miserable cunt as much as I sound like it. I'm actually I'm a pretty happy guy. But, you know, talking about how happy you are on fucking stage, I mean, it's not really going to be funny. So if I talk about my frustrations and my fears and my shortcomings, you know, yeah, that's where the comedy is. All right, there you go. All right, that was a twofer. All right, human farming. Billy Beerballs. Have you heard of the concept of human farming? It really makes a lot of sense. Instead of primitive forms of slavery, the population works and produces for the elite class. The quality of life is terrible because the ends to the means of working is really just to service a higher system you have no idea you're a part of. This video summarizes it really well. Sleep well. So I actually went to go look at this thing, this human farming, and I understand what they're saying, but they, as always, you know, they don't seem to, well, I didn't watch the whole video, but it's like in the 13 minutes, are they really going to give me a solution? And it also, first of all, the guy narrating it might be the most arrogant cunt I've ever heard in my life. I can't even, I'll click on it right now if you want. You know, he's just like, you know, a lot of people might be confused. Hang on. Ah, Jesus Christ, I got to get through the Dodge Durango commercial here. 14 seconds. You know, he's basically going like, you know, some people get confused and look at the government as it's this thing that's helping them out. Blah, 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 blah. Are you beginning to understand the cage that you were put in? Listen to this guy.
And how you can finally be free.
Wait a minute. Let me get back to the beginning here.
Here we go.
This is the story of your enslavement. How it came to be. And how you can finally be free. Like all animals, human beings want to dominate and exploit the resources around them.
All right, so that's the tone this guy takes. Let's get a little bit further into this thing. Here we go.
Occupation throughout history, and it is now reaching its destructive climax. Human society cannot be rationally understood until it is seen for what it is. A series of farms where human farmers own human livestock. Some people get confused.
Shit. I pulled it away there. Some people get confused. Here we go. Listen to this shit. Listen to this. Talking down to you.
Some people get confused because governments provide health care and water and education and roads, and thus imagine that there is some benevolence at work. Nothing could be further from the reality.
All right, so then he breaks it down, and then in the end he goes, are you beginning to understand the cage that you were in? And he keeps going, some people get confused. It's like, dude, I'm not fucking confused. All right, you arrogant cunt. You sound like you're up your own ass. You sound like you're sitting on top of the fucking pyramid. All right? You know what this type of shit does that it doesn't take into consideration? It doesn't take into consideration mouth-breathing fucking morons. That whole philosophy that why does this guy have this much and this guy has this much, that it's always the rich guy is evil and manipulative and undeserving. Now, I know this is shocking to hear from me the way I go off on bankers, but I'm really going off on the system of banking when I'm doing that. But like, you know, don't you guys have some fucking friends that, you know, they go to work, but they have no direction, they have no plan, and they just sit around bitch moaning, complaining about their fucking life, you know? And they feel like they have like this sense of entitlement that they just fucking deserve shit because, well, why should this guy be rich and I shouldn't? It's because maybe because he's smarter than you. Maybe he busted his fucking ass. Maybe you sit around smoking fucking weed or boozing it up all day. Like there's no personal responsibility. That's what I don't like about this thing. There's no, like, you know, it's just 100% these people who are running shit are 100% fucking evil, and that all these people who are enslaved are all good people. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, there aren't absolutely brilliant fucking people, but because of their lot in life, they ended up in a sweatshop in El Salvador. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is everybody in that sweatshop, you know, is not a fucking, I don't know what. It's, you know, there's some mouth-breathing morons in there. That's a bad example because I'm not condoning sweatshop labor either. But I'm just saying, go to a fucking sporting event like I did and just be stone sober and just sit around and look at the fucking people. Okay? Look at this shit they're eating. Look at this shit they're drinking. Look at their behavior. Look how their clothes are hanging off their fat fucking asses. And I know the food supply is poisoned. And I know that there's a bunch of fucking lies and all that type of shit. But
Is there any effort on the part of that individual to try to squeegee in front of their fucking eyes? Or do they just accept it? And if you do just accept it, you know, then how do I feel bad for you? Okay? Now, I haven't said that. You know, racism, all that stuff about, you know, you're a third world country. I don't condone any of that shit. I don't condone sweatshop labor. I don't condone, you should pay fucking people and they should, you know, they should be able to live comfortably. All right? Obviously, I think that. I don't condone that Geno's steak shit. Hey, this is America. Speak fucking English. I don't condone any of that type of shit. But I don't also go to that so liberal where it's just like, oh, look at that drug dealer. If he had the same opportunities I had, why he would be a doctor or a lawyer? It's like, well, why wouldn't he work at Enron or be a piece of shit banker? Why wouldn't he continue his scumbaggery? Why, when he becomes in my situation, does he then become an angel? I grew up in a suburb. There was cul-de-sacs in my neighborhood. I sucked at meth. I didn't become a doctor or a lawyer. I tried to. I was too fucking stupid. So I don't go into that pie in the sky, and I just can't get past this guy's fucking pregnant pauses. Some people are confused. It's like, dude, maybe you're fucking confused. Do you have a better idea? Do you have a better fucking system? I'm sure you do. And let me guess, in your fantasy that you don't have to fucking put to a test, so it can't be criticized because it's not been implemented. Let me guess, it all works out. We're all fucking arm in arm and racism goes away and everybody has a nice pair of fucking loafers as they walk out to get their newspaper that was delivered by a paperboy who now makes 80 grand a year, right? I don't fucking know. Whatever. Watch it now that you're polluted with my fucking thought on it.
Some people are confused. Some people look at the government and think that there's some sort of benevolence going on.
Just the fact that he uses benevolence, you know, making me feel stupid. What does benevolent mean? Is that some sort of fucking doing something for, you know what? I should look it up. Let's look it up. Oh, Jesus, it just disappeared after the V. It gave up on me. Like, well, I can't be trying to it. He can't be trying to spell that word. Okay. Benevolence. Let's go with the Webster's Dictionary. A disposition to do good, an act of kindness, a generous gift, a compulsory levy by certain English kings with no authority than the claim of prerogative. Well, Jesus, it takes a left turn on definition number three, doesn't it? All right, so I think he's using it in the first or second. All right, disposition to do good. Who the fuck knows, all right? Anyways, let's move on here before we try and solve the world's problems. You can go ahead and watch it if you want. All right, naked picture situation. A Sports Illustrated. I like that one. It wasn't really insulting. By the way, the Celtics were 0-4 before they won their first game, so I immediately started looking at the draft for next year, which I haven't done in the NBA, I think, ever, being a hockey guy. And I have to tell you, I was absolutely fucking shocked to see that the top 10 draft picks projected next year, 8 of them are freshmen. 8 out of 10 are freshmen, and the other 2 are sophomores. Like, it's such a tragedy that these guys can come out early. I'm being selfish as a sports fan because I know that they have, you know, a lot of people, like, it's a money situation. They got to come out. They come from a poor family or just a logical thing where I'm going to risk blowing out my knee playing ball for free or I can go to the NBA now and get $1 million. I know it's a no-brainer, but, you know, just back in the day, he got to watch 4 years, you know, of a Patrick Ewing or a Ralph Sampson, Hakeem Olajuwon. You saw those big men, like their college careers overlapping each other and the next great ones. And you're thinking, oh, wow, maybe he can win a championship by the time he's a senior or something like that. And just to see like the fact that the junior and senior classes have just been so raided by the NBA draft that there's not a junior or a senior even projected in the top 10, and you're basically going to draft a fucking teenager to try to turn the Boston Celtics around. By the way, I'm ordering the NBA package. I'm Like, this is when I step up as a fan. Not when they're good, not when they buy a title, but when they suck a bag of fucking dicks. That's when I'm going to sit there and watch them rise up from the ashes. Okay, naked picture situation. Hey, hey, Sports Illustrated. I'm in need of some advice, sir. I have a naked picture situation on my hands, although it may not necessarily be what you're thinking. Well, it's either you or your girlfriend, I would guess. He goes, so there's this girl, this lady that went to the same graduate school as me, and this girl was a real cunt. Dude, don't do this. If you have a naked picture of her, don't do it. He goes, we're talking pure evil. She was in school to be a producer, and she managed to alienate and demean every single person that ever worked with her. She was manipulative and awful to everyone. Oh, sounds like she's going to have a successful career if she gets into corporate America. All I'm hearing here is corner office. She was manipulative and awful to everyone, even her boyfriend, who she emasculated constantly, even in front of his friends. Well, that's on him. Walk out the door. What's she going to do? Give you a suplex? Go fuck yourself. I got a hand and a world full of pussy. I don't need you anymore, lady. Now, before I continue, I should probably say that I realized almost immediately how evil this girl was. So I always kept my distance and never associated with her in any way so that this isn't personal. Now, let's get to the issue at hand. Okay, so he's painted her as completely evil. And he's painted himself as being this even-keeled, rational person. I like this. It's almost as though he wrote the email. Now, let's get to the issue at hand. I happened to be perusing the internet one day in the manner that all men do. Oh, aren't you an eloquent little cunt? Huh? You mean looking at fucking porn? Look at you dancing around this. I'm starting to think that this woman is innocent and you're actually the evil person as you continue to try to paint yourself as a fucking hero who's a member of a polo club. You're rubbing one out, you filthy fucking animal. I'm not judging you. I do it too. Happily. Big grin on my face. Waving at the government and as I rub one out. As I bust a nut, I say into the camera that I can't see that's watching me, it's okay, I didn't want to run for office anyways. I say that as I have an orgasm. I can't even talk this week. Anyways, he said in the manner that all men do, and I happened to come across some naked selfies that this girl took on one of those tumblers devoted to that kind of thing, if you're curious. Now my question is, without trying to sound like an evil scumbag, probably too late, should I do anything with them? I could probably give a lot of closure and satisfaction by sending them out to the people she's fucked over in the past. Wait, it's this girl? Oh, that this girl took. Oh, okay. Wow. So she treats people like that during the day, and at night she takes naked selfies of herself. All right. I know this girl. I know this kind of girl. All right. Okay. Here we go. Let's try to pick this back up. This girl, she's like that fucking Wall Street guy that's stealing money and at night needs to go to a hooker with a fucking orange ball in his mouth. So I think this girl is, maybe this is like a narcissistic thing. Is she taking pictures of herself like she's just this piece of meat, or is she trying to look hot? The human fucking psyche, man, it's fucking insane. You know? And I'm not judging either, because I'm out of my fucking mind too. All right, let's continue here. On one of those, this is a really great email. There's so many fucking levels to this. You guys are, I can't tell who's out of their mind here. Her, or you're out of your mind. And this girl actually shot you down because you wanted to take her out for a cup of coffee. Should I do anything with them? I could probably give a lot of closure and satisfaction by sending them out to the people she's fucked over in the past. To be clear, I would never do this with someone's pictures that were meant privately for me. But these were already posted publicly online by her or someone else. Should I anonymously send out a link to people or just kind of laugh quietly to myself about the whole thing and keep it under wraps? Any advice would be appreciated. Well, what you're doing as far as like justifying your
role in this, if you were to do it, that they were already up there, is kind of like the drug dealer saying, like, well, if I didn't sell the drugs, someone else would. So I think you shouldn't do anything. And I don't know why. I don't know why, like, what am I trying to say here? Like, what do you think is funny about them? I mean, what is the big deal if somebody wants to put some naked photos of themselves up there? They like themselves. They think they look good. I don't understand why it's considered like nudity and that type of thing is considered that way. I mean, if she's doing a porno, I can see then why she can't get a fucking job at Johnson & Johnson. But, you know, she's got some naked photos. Who gives a fuck? She's probably in the best shape of her life, you know? I mean, personally, I wouldn't do it. Oh, who the fuck wants to look at me naked? Jesus, what the fuck? That actually disgusted me. So anyways, you know what, dude? Don't do that, man. You're getting drawn into her fucking world. Okay, that if that woman is the way you painted her out to be, she has a bunch of issues, and the best kind of guy she's ever going to attract is some ballless, fucking spineless jackass that she's not going to respect. If I had to guess, she's a woman who needs a guy to tell her what's what and fucking, you know, put a hurting on her, you know, in the bedroom. She needs to be face down in the pillows being told what the fuck to do. She's got some sort of fucking issue, man. But, you know, just be happy you're not going to work for her. She's out of your life, okay? And she's, you know, and if she walks around treating people like that, she's never going to really develop lasting relationships, meaningful relationships. She's not going to have people in her life that would step out in front of a bus for her, you know? So she's never going to get the full human experience. I feel like that is enough of a punishment. You don't need to go in there and like that. That's really like a vengeance thing is very seventh grade girl. And I think you're above that. Just, you know, just leave him alone and continue to jerk off to him, you fucking creep. I'm not going to lie to you. I would too. I'm not judging you. Welcome. Welcome to my level. All right. French Revolution and Bankers. Hi there, Billy Bandwagon. I've been a fan of the Monday Morning Podcast for a while now, and you were on the Crab Feet podcast. Oh, yeah, with Jay Larson on the All Things Comedy Network, everybody. He said it reminded me of something. Pre-revolution France was almost identical to the way the U.S. is now. Oh, God, I hate when people keep predicting the demise of this country, like they're giving us some sort of insight, like people in this country can't see it coming. All right, I'm not saying every mouth breathing moron sees it coming, but you know, anybody who has any sort of intelligence, we see it coming. Okay, all right, there, Mr. Fucking rubbing your goddamn chin. Actually, he's probably an American too. All right, France in 1787 had grinding poverty, tax inequality, and was nearly bankrupt from the Seven Years' War. Ugh, and then he writes, familiar? Question mark. I'm not even going to read this fucking thing. You're already so up your own ass. Wow, I never looked at it that way. Wait, does history repeat itself? Gee, you're really onto something here, sir. Good fucking Lord. You know what's funny about this type of shit? Is this probably isn't even this person's thought. They're probably just regurgitating something else that they've read from a website, which I do all the fucking time. I do the exact same thing you're doing here, sir, except I don't go, familiar? Some people are confused. Why can't people just present a fucking an opinion without like patting themselves on the back about how fucking smart they are all the time? You know, you're a fucking moron just like me, okay? I'm going to read this and I'm going to skip over. Familiar? Does that ring a bell? Pot calling the kettle? Hoo, hoo, hoo. Ah, with your fucking smoking jacket, you cunt. All right, here we go. Jesus fucking Christ. All right. He goes, familiar? It should be. The modern U.S. actually has worse wealth and tax inequality than 1787 France and even pre-fall of Rome. Dude, this is all old shit. I've already heard this theory a zillion times before you present it. And, you know, and I'm not going to fucking read this and get all fucking depressed because I understand this. This is why I got out of conspiracy theory and just got a dog, and I'm sitting here watching the bread and circus of fucking sports like I never have before, because there's no way out of this. Rather than present this shit to me, I want you to write back to me and give me your solution. You give me the fucking solution rather than pointing out the fucking obvious as you rub your goddamn chin. All right? Jesus fucking Christ. All right, sorry. I was having such a great goddamn day. Jeez, we're an hour and a half in here. I'm a long-winded son of a bitch this week. All right, uplifting documentaries. Couldn't come soon enough on the podcast. Hey there, Billy Boy. Love the podcast and all your specials. Can't wait to see you in Dublin in a few weeks. You're a good man. Tell all those other Irish cunts to come out and see this German-Irish cunt. We'll all drink some fucking Bushmills afterwards. What do you say? And Irish eyes are laughing. Billy Redface is bright and gay. I got a heartwarming documentary for you. Since Blackfish and Dirty Wars might have got you down a bit. I appreciate that. People, I love when you send the documentaries that are eye-opening and make me feel like I want to kill myself. But also, every once in a while, you got to give me a little sugar. So he goes, they might have got you down a little bit. Here's some uplifting stuff. It's called The Pipe, and it's about a tiny village in the west coast of Ireland taking on a massive oil corporation and winning. Oh, I love it already, even if it isn't true. I love it. It focuses on the community's refusal to have a dangerous pipeline running through their village. It shows the vicious brutality of the cops against the protesters, and in particular, five men who go so far as to serve time in prison to get justice. Dude, those guys are saints. That's when you are committed to a cause, all right? And that's when, you know, they should make a movie about you. And then fucking actors who have personal trainers and microbiotic diets, you know, show up with abs and get to play you and your life story, that William Wallace shit, you know? Five men who go so far as to serve time in prison to get justice. That's fucking, you know, they don't make men like that anymore. Well, I guess they do. They made five of them on the west coast of Ireland. God bless them. For once, the people win. And as a recent development in the case has seen, the Shell Oil Company have lost their license for work on the west coast of Ireland. I'm watching that today. Today, here's the link. It's up on YouTube, everybody. You should check that out. It's called The Pipe. And another one for the full documentary. Oh, I guess, okay, this is the link for the trailer. It's on YouTube. But if you want to watch the full thing, we'll have these links. If for some reason if you go to surf for shit, you can't find it like I always do. It's called www.filmsforaction.org/watch/the_pipe_2010/again. Those are all backslashes, by the way. That is a backslash, right? Yeah, backslash. All right. All right. That's the podcast for this week, everybody. I want to thank everybody who came out to my shows this weekend in D.C., New York, and Philadelphia. It was fucking, I'm going to use the word magical. There, I said it. At the risk of everybody, you know, coming at me in a homophobic way, I don't give a shit. I like the twinkle toes, so come at me that way. I don't give a fuck. All right? It was a magical weekend. I had a great time. And you know what? It's even going to get more, there's going to be even more fairy dust on my career this weekend, the final leg of the Billy Red State Tour. All right. I am playing in Deadwood, South Dakota, November 15th, November 16th. I'm at the Brady Theater in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then I'm wrapping it up at the Orpheum Theater in Wichita, Kansas. I will be coming out, taking pictures and signing shit and all that. I apologize to people who came out this weekend to the earlier shows. A couple nights I had early shows, and I can't go out there because it slows shit down, and then I get in trouble with the union because they have to go dark, so I can't go out there and load the other crowd in. So I really feel bad about that because I actually really enjoy going out and saying hello to people. So my apologies to people on the first show of in Philly and in New York. And the second show, The Beacon, I actually came out there late because
I had a lot of friends and shit coming up there. So I got some guilt about that. But, all right. The Deadwood Show, the Oklahoma and Wichita. I'm coming out after all those shows. And whatever you want to do, pictures, autographs, whatever you want to do, I really appreciate everybody coming out. It's been a hell of a fucking year. And there you go. And then I got one more gig, Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven, Connecticut, on November 23rd. And after that, I got one last giant tour. And that's when I do the European tour. And I'm going to fucking do my best to fucking murder when I go over there. I'm amped up for these shows, man. I got to finish strong. And then the last one, the Wiltern Theater in Los Angeles, my home city here. And it's going to be me and the entire Rose Bowl dais is going to be there. All right? The Ocean's 11 of the Rose Bowl. Everybody is going to be there. It's going to be me, Joe Bartnick, Jason Lawhead, and Andrew Themelis. That's it. The Four Horsemen of the fucking Rose Bowl. We're all going to be there, all doing stand-up at the Wiltern Theater to bring in the new year. You know, we'll be smoking cigars, drinking one quick thing of scotch before we go home and go to bed, and then go to see the granddaddy of them all the next day. It's going to be a hell of a fucking night. That's going to be an unbelievable fucking night. I'm calling it right now. If you ever want to see the fucking beautiful knuckleheads that I hang out, you can see, hang out with, yeah, I'm telling you, go to that show. All right, I'm done with that. Hyping my own shit. Here's the final thing here. Now that the show's over, don't forget to sign up for your free trial of Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Support this podcast and get an extended free trial of Hulu Plus when you go to the podcast page at BillBird.com and click on the Hulu Plus banner. Or go to HuluPlus.com/Bill. That's HuluPlus.com/Bill. Okay, that's the podcast for this week. Have an excellent week. Good luck. God bless. Go fuck yourselves. And I'll see you out there on the road.